Our next case, 11-2037, the Cleveland Metro Bar versus Kevin Tuig. Excuse me, are you Mr. Tuig?
I am, ma'am.
Have you, you did not check in?
I did check in this morning.
You did?
I did.
Okay. All right. Mr. Tuig?
Chief Justice, Justices, Counsel, may it please the Court, I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. My name is Kevin Tuig, and I am the respondent in this matter representing myself pro se. First and foremost, I would like to express to this High Court that I have broken the law and that I have violated rules of professional conduct. I take full responsibility for my actions. I believe sanctions are necessary and appropriate. I ask this Court, after its de novo review, to consider the appropriate sanction. I stand before this honorable Court today a better man, a better person, and a changed person. Beginning in 1996, I practiced law for 13 years without incident. I had 100-plus cases at all times, generally working on them by myself. There was no disciplinary, no legal, no ethical issues throughout that time. During that time also, I became wealthy. I became conceited. I became selfish, and I became sick. 2006, birth of my first child. In 2007, the birth of twins. My life became a little more hectic, and my disease became much more prevalent. I consider myself to be a child abuser, sitting in a bar, sitting anywhere other than home for 5 or 6 hours without, with children at home, is tantamount to child abuse. And I believe that that's what I did at that time. In 2009, it became a little too much for me. On October 17th of 2009, that is my sobriety date. I voluntarily stopped drinking. I went to a counselor, Dr. Lee Horowitz, and I saw Dr. Horowitz for mental health issues and everything that was going on in my life. And again, I did that voluntarily. I'm not a bad person trying to get good.
Was this during the pendency of your felony?
It was not. It was prior to the felony, the felony indictment.
Okay. When was the indictment?
May 2010, Your Honor.
And when did you say that you sought professional help?
October of 2009, when I...
But this was... it was after the concealment of the $710,000, the illegal activity.
No, Your Honor, that was not, the Denver situation was not illegal activity. I was charged for, I believe, 4 or 5 days, and all charges were dropped. Nothing ever came of that. I never testified in any subsequent hearings.
So it was just the tax evasion?
That's correct. That's the only crime I've ever been committed of.
And that period of the tax evasion was before October
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
When was the period of the tax evasion? When did that activity, when was that undertaken?
I was indicted in 2010 for tax evasion from the tax year 2000.
The tax year 2000.
Correct.
You've served 8 months in prison.
I did not.
You did not.
I was sentenced on December 14th of 2011 by the Honorable Kathleen O'Malley to 6 months of home detention and 4 years of probation, along with the stipulations that I continue the progress with a 12-step program, that I continue the mental health counseling.
But you're still on probation.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Can I clarify something you said? You said you weren't charged. I thought you were charged, but then you cooperated with their ability to apprehend whomever they were looking for, and then the charges were dismissed. Is that not correct?
Perhaps I misspoke. I was charged in Denver, Colorado, and in Denver, I believe that the law is different in Denver, but they have preliminary charges, and then they can enforce those charges within a 10 to 14-day period. 4 to 5 days later, all charges that they had made were dismissed.
Because you cooperated with the government?
No, because I shouldn't say that. I don't know why they were dismissed. I was representing a client there, and I believe the only violation that I had in Denver, Colorado was not even a violation. I believe that it was doing my job, which was I was on my way to turn the fugitive, my client, in, and when asked, I was arrested with him a half a mile from the courthouse. And when they asked me questions about my client, that information was privileged under the attorney-client privilege, and obviously I was in Denver, and obviously I was with this gentleman, but I was unwilling to divulge attorney-client privilege, and for that was charged and spent a night in jail. And then everything was dropped. I returned to Cleveland, Ohio, and never heard anything of it. So that matter has nothing to do with, as far as I'm concerned, any criminal activity. I believe that it's misplaced in this hearing, but I understand the relator's concern or objection.
Counsel, how much time do you have left on your probation?
Your Honor, I was sentenced to 4 years of probation on December 14th, commencing that day of 2011. So I've completed 16 months.
So you've got to 2015.
That's correct. Although the mental health professional that I was seeing as appointed by the federal government has released me from any and all treatment and contacted the probation officer and told her that I would no longer need his services. I continue to see a counselor on my own and believe that in the program, the 12-step program that I am working, where I've attended over 900 12-step meetings since 2009, since my sobriety date, and have a very good core of friends and colleagues and a support group in this fellowship. And I believe that that is quite a bit of counseling on its own. Further,
you were suspended with an interim suspension on January 7th of 2011?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And apparently there have been some difficulties in getting you to respond to disciplinary counsel. What is the reason for that?
I don't, as far as responding, Your Honor, if you could clarify the...
Well, production of documents, for example?
Your Honor,
failure to keep your address current with the disciplinary counsel, restitution, those types of things?
I'm 100% guilty of not giving a forwarding address as ordered in my interim suspension. And quite simply, I was moving from office to office to my home. I didn't know where I was going to land or what I was going to do at that point. I always received mail at my home, and generally speaking, I thought I received mail at an office, or I had probably three offices during the pendency of my 14 years of practice, and that is my error in not forwarding an address. But with respect to the production of documents, Your Honor, I would like to characterize that as, I understand the perception of non-cooperation. The position that I was in mentally, actually in physically, is where I was. I had documents in two different offices, one of which I had been evicted from. I was unable to get to those documents. There was a cost involved in getting things such as bank records from 4 years prior that I simply could not afford to do. I attempted to get some records together, but this case was filed by disciplinary counsel or certified by disciplinary counsel in August of 2010. At that time, I had a job, a license, a administrative assistant, money to pay a lawyer, simple things like computers and copy machines and records. There's no request for any documents whatsoever until the following April. That was the first time there was a document request.
Well, you did receive notice of the suspension in January of 2011, correct?
I did.
And there were complaints that you filed after that suspension was given to you?
There was one complaint that was filed. It was the Jonathan Jackson was the gentleman's name, and I found out about my suspension on January 19th of 2011, it was issued on the 7th. And there's a statute of limitations that was going to run on this young man's case 4 days later, and I made the decision to contact another lawyer, save the statute of limitations, immediately withdraw, and counsel took that case over for Mr. Jackson. Perhaps a wrong decision, certainly an unethical decision, yet weighing the pros and cons of blowing a statute for a client or filing it, withdrawing, and notifying the court that I was unable to practice law. I don't know if it was correctly or incorrectly, but I chose to...
What kind of a case was that?
It was a motor vehicle accident, and the statute was running on the 24th.
So not that complicated that you couldn't have found another attorney and said, here's the complaint that I've drafted, put your name on it and file it and protect the statute for him.
Your Honor, I attempted to do that, but at that point, I believe every attorney on planet Earth was afraid of anything that...
You said in your opening comments, I became wealthy. Are you still wealthy?
I am the polar opposite of wealthy, Your Honor. Right. I don't have 10 cents.
And what are you doing now?
I am a member of the Laborers Local 310 in Cleveland, Ohio. And when work is available, I work in the steel mills. I swing sledgehammers next to my former clients. I dig holes. I do what's asked of me. And I receive a check for that.
And what's your family status at this point?
I am very, very happily married to a wonderful woman who is working as a college professor, adjunct, helping to take care of our three children, all under six, and supporting me.
And what are you requesting that we do with your case?
I'm requesting that you consider the sanctions based on the prior case law that has been before this court, considering my violations and my felony conviction of an 11-year-old tax evasion that I certainly accepted responsibility for, pled guilty to, did not try the case. I have fulfilled every obligation under probation and believe that at some point in the future that probation will be terminated early because of the progress that I have made.
So you're asking for an indefinite rather than a disbarment?
I'm asking that after this court's de novo review that they look at the cases, and I don't know what a proper sanction is here. I don't believe that my behavior, I would like the opportunity to practice law and support my family.
And your probation is scheduled to last until when?
2011. It would be 2015, Your Honor.
Have you read our recent cases in which we have indicated that we don't think we should let people back in the practice while they're on probation?
I have, Your Honor, which has prompted me to speak with my probation officer and also counsel who represented me during the federal matter, who is strongly believes, given the progress that I have made, that there's a possibility of, a probability, actually, of my probation being terminated earlier.
But Mr. Toohey, this isn't just about your conviction for tax evasion. You try to minimize that you flew to another state, met with a fugitive, took $700,000. You knew he was being sought by the authorities, took $700,000, transferred it into your IOLTA account, then took $50,000 as a fee as his attorney, all the while knowing that this was a wanted man and these funds were illegal. And you think we should not consider that as part of your discipline?
Your Honor, respectfully, the money that I went to Denver, I met with on his behalf with three separate law firms that he would like to represent him. They quoted retainers of approximately $200,000 apiece, and he wired money from an account to my IOLTA, not into a shoebox or cash. At that point, I had the faintest idea that this money was stolen, that they were ill-gotten gains. I know that he was being accused as two other people had been apprehended, but I did not know the nature of his crime or his offenses at any point. That money never, it may have hit my IOLTA account while I was in Denver, but it was frozen along with every single ever.
You didn't transfer $50,000 to your business account out of that $710,000?
That money was transferred by my law partner at the time to the business account, but the money had never – all those accounts were frozen.
By whom?
By the state of Colorado.
But for the state of Colorado – those monies would have been at your disposal.
That's correct, Your Honor. I would say it would have been at my disposal. At the time, I did not know even the amount of the funds that were sent, as it was in a brokerage account, and he did not know the amount. I'm not trying to minimize that. But
it was in a brokerage account?
It was in his brokerage account, and he simply said, liquidate this account and send it to this lawyer's trust account,
okay,
so he may pay lawyers in the future. Again, there was no crime. After investigating all the funds, they realized that I had never received any funds from any of these ill-gotten gains. And
thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Pollack.
Chief Justice O'Connor, Justice of the Court, may it please the Court, my name is Jeff Pollack, and I represent the Cleveland Metropolitan Bar Association as realtor in this case. The Bar Association has sought disbarment of Mr. Tuig from the beginning. The panel so found, and the board so found unanimously. This is a case of egregious, blatant, multiple violations. There is no question that Mr. Tuig has the disease of alcoholism, or had it. And it is a mitigating factor. It's not a defense. These acts which he's committed over and over again, which I'm going to go through in summary fashion, were intentional and knowing and injured many individual clients and people. The tax evasion, first to start, is not simply a failure to file a return, but he pled guilty to willfully attempting to conceal his true income by concealing the profits of his law practice, by paying substantial personal expenses through it and falsely claiming them as business expenses. He structured deposits to and withdrawals from both business and personal bank accounts to avoid currency requirements. He withdrew currency from bank accounts to conceal large personal expenses. And he provided false information to the FBI. This is all outlined in his plea agreement, which he signed. At the hearing, he initially tried to blame his accountant. That says these were accounting mistakes, and later in the hearing admitted that they were fraudulent acts by him. The Colorado incident, which has been alluded to, I want to clarify a few things in terms of facts. He went to Colorado and was squired around by this man, Hysir Randell, who Mr. Tuig knew and testified at the hearing was involved in some kind of a manhunt against Rindell for his involvement at the time of a tax swindle of the state of Colorado. And the law was after him. And Tuig knew that. And nonetheless, he participated in this wire transfer of $700,000 to his IOLTA account. He actually took the authorization written statement from Randell to the brokerage to have the money transferred. And as the court has indicated, $50,000 of that was then immediately transferred to his operating account. He says now that he didn't authorize it. He authorized his law colleague to make the transfer. It's on the record. The board found violations of 8.4. There were two other client matters, which I'll put together, which involved monies deposited or received by Mr. Tuig into his IOLTA account that were then due to the client after settlement or resolution. And he eventually returned that money, but only after a year or, in one case, 15 months, after delays, attempts by the client to get the money back unsuccessfully. Finally, the monies were returned, but only after these clients had been after Mr. Tuig for this long. He didn't return the money because he had spent it, and these were violations of his IOLTA account again. He used his IOLTA account as a piggy bank, which I'm going to detail a little bit later. In the case of one client, Ms. Kazin, she actually got the Beechwood police to go with her to his office to get her funds, her money's a settlement check. He received the settlement check with a letter from the opposing counsel asking that the release be signed and returned, which was never done. Tuig kept the money, not only his fee, but the entire settlement, and resulting in this Beechwood police incident. Finally, the money was returned 10 months later. Another individual, and this involves this court in terms of violation of this court's order, a young man by the name of Christopher Rollick came into about $275,000 by virtue of, let me back up. Christopher Rollick was the beneficiary of a judgment in favor of his deceased mother involving multiple beneficiaries. Tuig represented Rolick in a mediation of that amount, which resulted in Rolick receiving $275,000 plus. Rolick was concerned that he himself could not manage this money, and he asked Tuig to do it for him. In retrospect, a mistake. Tuig did disperse monies from this amount, from the IOLTA account, but there was a balance due Rolick of about $25,000. And as of March 31, 2011, before our hearing, before the board, Tuig had $2,000 in his IOLTA account. Once again, he had spent this client money. And no restitution had been made by the time of the hearing, and to my knowledge, no restitution has been made to this date. Once again, a violation of this court's order, which would have been to make restitution of that money after this order. He testified at the hearing initially that he didn't owe the money, and then changed his testimony acknowledging that he did. His IOLTA account and the use of that involved multiple violations. He had $1 million of judgment liens against him. And in order to avoid judgment sweeping or collection, he took monies from his IOLTA account and paid about $16,000 to a company called Equitable Property, which is a company he owned. So it was a way to get money out of his IOLTA into his own name using a corporate name to avoid judgment sweeping. He made IOLTA payments to his secretary, a CLE, his attorney, $1,000 to a bar, and he doesn't know why, multiple NSF checks, insufficient funds to pay these clients. His own brief states this, and I'm going to quote it because it's worth stating. This is his brief to this court. Respondent will once again stipulate and take full responsibility for mismanaging his trust account and virtually every bank account he has had access to. This behavior was reprehensible, irresponsible, and reckless. Finally, the order of this court, January 7, 2011, it required, as the court well knows, and this was by virtue of his plea to the income tax evasion, January 7, 2011, to cease the practice of law, notify counsel and courts in writing, refund unearned fees, account for trust money, and provide a current address to this court and to Realtor. He filed two complaints after that, one in Union County and one in Ashtabula County. The filing fees were both NSF checks. The change of address was never given to the Realtor, to this court, or to the board. The Bar Association sent him letters on January 21st, February 4th, February 8th, February 14th. Because of these NSF checks, all these letters returned, not deliverable, unclaimed. And also the failure to pay Rolick occurred after this court's order. The board found aggravating circumstances in almost every regard. A dishonest or selfish motive in relation to the tax evasion and the Colorado conspired fugitive incident, and Kazin. A pattern of misconduct, the IOLTA misuse. Multiple offenses. There were 16 violations found by the board. Eight of those involved 8.4, dishonesty and fraud. He lacked cooperation by failing to give the addresses. The production of documents was asked about. He never produced a single document to us. We filed a motion to compel, which was granted, and the board actually had to issue sanctions, and he still didn't produce documents. The resulting harm to victims and failure to make restitution is, of course, Rolick, which remains outstanding.
Is that the only outstanding restitution?
To my knowledge, yes.
All right. A good bit of your argument has been contained in your brief. I'm assuming you're headed toward a portion of your argument in connection with the sanction.
Yes.
So where is the Metro Bar? What is the relator's position in connection with the sanction in this?
Our position is that that Kevin Tuig should be disbarred permanently.
All right. And are you relying on a case that we can look to that might, in your research, show us some similarities between the instant case and others?
Yes. There are cases which this court knows where there's simply tax evasion alone,
yes,
or misuse of IOLTA accounts alone, which would suggest indefinite suspension. But this court has many cases in which, when you put all those together, a tax evasion, 8.4 violations, multiple incidences of deceit and misrepresentation, and multiple instances of IOLTA violations, all that together warrants disbarment. And the cases are in our brief, but briefly, the case of Weaver, Dadisman, Farrell, and Mason are all support that proposition.
Thank you.
The issue of alcoholism, the board found, and I want to make one clarification in our brief. There was, in this case, a certified counselor who did make a diagnosis of alcohol dependency, and I want to correct that because that did occur. But what the board found was that this witness had no knowledge of the specifics that Tuig had committed and did not even meet this gentleman, Mr. Tuig, until 2009, and yet tried to tie the tax evasion from 2000 into alcoholism. And the board found that really there was an attempt to attribute all the misconduct to alcoholism, which the board found to be not credible. There were many instances where Mr. Tuig's violations occurred after his alleged sobriety in October 2009. The Kazan incidents involving the Beechwood police, Rollick, the young man who still owed $22,000, all the IOLTA violations, the unanswered letters to the realtor, and the violations of this court all occurred after his alleged sobriety in October 2009. So once again, alcoholism is a recognized mitigating factor. It's not a defense. And it certainly does not even begin to address the multiple violations which were intentionally done repeatedly and very seriously. For these reasons, the realtor, Cleveland Metropolitan Bar Association, urges this court to affirm the board's recommendation and order permanent disbarment.
Thank you. Mr. Tuig, you've used all your time. You may have 30 seconds to sum up.
Thank you, Your Honor. First, I apologize if any of my statements seem to be excuses. The only thing I'd like to address is that the panel gave little weight to the mitigating factors of alcoholism as well as the anxiety and major depressive disorder that was diagnosed by Dr. Lee Horowitz. And during all of the things that I have done, it was one period of time, and during that time I was in the throes of this disease as well as a major depressive disorder. And when a person stops drinking, it does not mean that it's not alcoholism, it's alcoholism. And I still have the disease I will have the rest of my life. It's fatal if untreated. Thankfully, there is a treatment, but this period of time where all of the violations that Mr. Pollack discussed were happening during my psychological mental disorders as well as in the throes of my alcoholism, and I believe that those are significant mitigating factors that don't make them right, but at least there's some understanding. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision.